Now here's Mike Buck and Governor Linda Lingle on News Radio 830 KHVH.
And all along the statewide Governor's Network, we want to welcome you on the Big Island, Hilo, on the beach, KTBH 102.1 FM. On Maui, KAOI, 1110 AM, and of course on Kauai at our friends Kong, 570 AM, and here at News Radio 830 KHVH in Honolulu. And you neighbor islanders, don't forget, it's as easy as a toll-free call away to hook up with the governor and talk story at 1-888-565-8383. Lots of ground to cover. And, you know, it seems like I'm always saying hello or goodbye to the governor, and I just found out in the break getting ready to do the show today, governor, that you're off to the Bahamas, and I was going to say, how come?
I'm going for a one-day conference and a signing of an international agreement, Mike, among island nations, and I'm representing America, the state of Hawaii. Mm-hmm. We'll represent America, signing with New Zealand and Iceland, and we're there in the Caribbean because those issues involving energy security really affect the island nations or states or territories in a different way.
Are they just like us? In other words, you mentioned when we were getting ready to do the show that we can't hook up to the California or Oregon grid.
That's right. That's probably the most obvious similarity that we have, Mike. In other states, if the power starts to run low, you're able to hook into the grid of other states. And that's not true for island nations. Also, the distance it takes to get oil to an island nation. And island nations tend to be more dependent on oil, Guam, the Marshall Islands. In fact, there was a recent report just this week, the Marshall Islands has notified the United Nations that in September they are actually going to run out of electricity because they can't pay their oil bill anymore. The increase has been so substantial. Now, a place like Iceland is almost 100% energy independent because of the geothermal resource that they have.
Well, let me ask you this, Governor, because I know that this is very important. That means that all these island economies are all oil-based, all fossil fuel-based. Here we have, and I would imagine, not only is it apropos, the opportunity in Hawaii to really be the model of what islands can do, because we can virtually do it all.
And that's true, Mike, and it's true for most of the other islands as well. But the technology as well as the investment have to be there. The third component is a regulatory structure that encourages renewables, and that is not the current structure we have. And so there needs to be wholesale change through the Public Utilities Commission, through legislation. So after I go to the Bahamas for just this one-day signing, and I'll give a speech.
Just out of curiosity.
And they're paying for me to go.
Yeah, I was going to say, but one day.
One day. It takes me as long to get there as I'm on the ground there.
I would say so, each way.
It's not my preference, Mike, but the U.S. Department of Energy has signed this important Hawaii Clean Energy Initiative with us. They're a major partner. So when they asked me to go and represent the country at this international signing, I said, yes, of course. And from the Bahamas, I'll travel to Denver, where I'll meet up with a member of our State House and Senate, Senator Menor and Representative Morita, as well as all the members of the Public Utilities Commission. Mm-hmm. We have the county energy coordinators, people from HECO going. And again, the meeting in Denver will be at the National Renewable Energy Lab. This is our nation's cutting-edge research institution, and we'll be doing two things there, Mike. One is looking at the regulatory structure and the changes that have to be made in order for renewables to come on in a big way. And secondly, we'll review all the latest technologies in electric car, in solar, in wind, in geothermal, and so on.
We've raised the bar recently with the with your signing of the bill that mandates solar installations in all homes starting in 2010.
We're the only state to have done that.
Now, right? And I would imagine, Governor, that there's a lot of municipalities and even states looking at this as a model, in addition to some of the other things that are on deck. So it must be not only challenging, but a little nerve-wracking to be under that microscope.
Well, we're going to have to, because we're the most oil-dependent state in America. We have no choice, Mike, but to make this transformation, and it truly is transformational. It's not baby steps. We have to make big steps while at the same time guaranteeing the reliability of the existing system. And that's a big challenge, and that's why everybody has to work together. Yeah. This can't be partisan. It can't be just government or just industry. It has to be everyone working together.
You know, you mentioned the word partisan, and every time I hear that, it makes me think. I know that tomorrow is the final day where folks can file papers for elected office, for to run in this election. And I know that the Republican Party has been doing a lot to try to come up with more challenges. And I know that this has been something that has been for you very important. Not only is the only Republican governor that we've had here since statehood, since Bill Quinn. And I want to know if there's going to be some news about additional people. Has the party been successful in getting some more people to file? Because tomorrow's the day.
Well, we have gotten some terrific people, Mike, and you'll start to hear about them in some of the state House and Senate races. But my prediction is that, generally speaking, whether it's the House or Senate or the local city council, mm-hmm. you're going to have fewer and fewer people willing mm-hmm. to run for office. Yeah. And part of it is the nature of politics today compared to when I started. It has just become so vicious and so personal. Mm-hmm. Also, it's become a place where you really can't take people at their word the way you used to. Yeah. I mean, when I deal with some of the old timers in the legislature, regardless of party, I know when I talk to them, that's the way it is. They tell me, they give me their word one way or the other, whether they agree with me or not, I can count on it. With some of the newer people in politics, they don't realize the importance of their word being important, being an asset. And I just think fewer and fewer people are going to come into politics. And it's too bad, because I spent a good part of my life trying to convince people the only way to make change and get improvement is to get in there and be a part of things. But I can understand their feelings.
It must be disconcerting. And I'll tell you another thing. There's an awful lot of things that people are now starting to say in the public and react for, and things to be in form of initiative. The point in fact comes to mind is this big contentious issue of the rail system here on the island of Oahu. The opponents of rail made this huge announcement last week how excited they were of having the governor signing the petition to put this thing on the ballot. And I read the press release that came from your office that said that the governor and the administration is all for voters making choices, but that you were not saying one way or another whether you were opposed to rail. But didn't signing that petition put you in that position?
Well, people always hear what they want to hear and mm-hmm. read what they want to read, Mike. But clearly, putting this on the ballot gives people a chance to vote. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say how you will vote, but when you sign, you say that I want people to have a chance to vote on the most expensive project in Hawaii history. And I think things like an initiative on a project such as rail can bring people into government. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you try to thwart the public, if you try every machination to keep them off the ballot, if you criticize mm-hmm. them for trying to get on the ballot, you're really just dampening down the public's willingness to become involved in politics. Mm-hmm. So from my perspective, Mike, whether it's local school boards being put on the ballot for a vote or CONCON or rail, I think on these major issues of the day, it's important to give people some opportunity to participate.
Wouldn't a CONCON perhaps come up with new ways to facilitate expediting something into a choice, into an initiative? You know, I mean, I can remember the prop battles in California when there'd be 20 propositions that people would be asked to vote on. And here, I know we've tried it a few times here, and a yes-no vote means no, and a no vote means yes, and a blank vote means confusion. Maybe a CONCON can straighten that all out.
Well, it can, Mike. And the fact is, we don't have initiative and referendum mm-hmm. in our state. The only way to get something on the ballot is if the legislature votes to put it on the ballot. The rail initiative is something that's allowed under the county charter. And Maui's charter, I know, also has initiative. I'm assuming the other two counties have that same provision, but I don't know that for certain. I can tell you, under our state constitution, you cannot, as a citizen group, initiate something onto the ballot. And that is something that CONCON could address. Give the public more opportunity. You could limit the kinds of initiatives that could go on the ballot, or you could have it wide open. For instance, I've always felt, Mike, it's not fair to put land use questions on the ballot. Mm-hmm. For instance, if you have a piece of property and you go through the entire process and you get the Planning Commission approval and the council approval, the state land use changed it for you, I don't think it's fair for the public then to be able to come in after the fact
and
like that and change your zoning.
Well, there's any number of people, Governor, that say, look, I vote to elect people to do what I'm not prepared to do. I mean, I'm prepared to be a radio broadcaster. I don't know if I'm qualified to make land use decisions, so I don't want to vote on those issues.
Well, I can certainly understand that, Mike. The concern about the rail, though, if you recall, this only passed by a 5-4 vote of the council, so it reflects that the community is pretty well divided because they're representing their constituents. And if this particular project is not successful, Mike, the downside is very, very big to the taxpayers for generations to come, not just for years to come. And that's why, again, something so big, each of us, whether we're an expert at it or not, should be able to weigh in and say, well, we're willing to take a chance on it, or we think the downside is too big and we don't want to take a chance.
There you go. Now, and you have not said throughout any of the proceedings how you personally feel about the rail project or not, but that you are more than supportive of people being able to decide. And that's a personal decision anyway. I'm not asking you for your decision, but sooner or later, your decision is going to be made, whether it's in a vote form or an announcement.
Right. Well, Mike, I've always publicly supported the concept of rail. Right. I think it could be successful for us. I am concerned about some of the plans on this current proposal. And again, a lot of my decision and others' decisions going to depend upon how is this really going to come about? How is it going to work? For instance, Mike, when, remember, the decision got made, we're not going to go to the airport. Well, that was a political decision. It's detrimental to the success of rail. And eventually, I think the city has come around and said, okay, we're going to add the airport back in. So while I think rail as a concept can be successful for us, it depends on the final form that it takes. Also, Mike, this issue about development occurring around the transit stations, nobody has explained what level of development, how intense will the development be, how many people's property have to be taken under eminent domain for this to occur. I think there are just a lot of questions, and we have time between now and an election to get some good objective information. And when I came out to talk about signing the petition, if you remember, Mike, things had started to deteriorate. You know, the mayor was attacking the anti-rail group in a very personal way. The anti-rail group had horrible things about the mayor and, and other politicians coming on their websites. And I just thought, this is too big to deteriorate into this name-calling that was going on. And I had hoped that by coming out like that, we could refocus attention. And I think we have, because things tended to calm down. And now we have, between now and the election, to try to get out some good factual information.
Okay, you're listening to Governor Linda Lingle, Talk Story with the Governor, all along the network. We are being heard live now in Hilo on the beach, KTBH 102.1 FM. Also on Maui, KAOI, 1110 a.m., and on Kauai, our friends at Kong at 570 a.m. Okay, welcome back. It's Talk Story with Governor Linda Lingle, all along the statewide network. And by the way, our recordings of this program are archived on the governor's website at www.hawaii.gov/gov. I know it sounds confusing, but it's easy. Hawaii.gov/gov. And once again, welcome to our listeners in Hilo, on the beach, KTBH 102.1 FM, on Maui, on Kauai at 1110 AM, and on Kauai at Kong, 570 on the AM dial. The telephone number is 521-8383 here on Oahu. And those of you on the neighbor islands can join the governor and talk story toll-free at 1-888-565-8383. Let's go to the phones. Our perennial Rob in Aina Haina has been waiting the longest. Rob, welcome to the program.
Aloha, Governor.
Hi, Rob.
Hi. President Bush lifted the ban on drilling. And I just wondered, Governor, what you felt. And I, as far as the Congress is concerned, all of us as fuel consumers at almost $5 a gallon.
Well, I agreed with the president on this, Rob. For a couple of reasons. One, I think it's important to keep focused on the major issue for us. And while the economy is important, our security as a country is most important. So I think having access to that oil would be very important. Secondly, I think when the president made that announcement And I know that the Congress is also looking at it. People of both parties, it had an immediate impact on the marketplace. In other words, if people who are currently producing oil start to realize that America is not going to sit and let the resource just sit there, then the price of oil is going to be affected positively and is going to start to come down. If you look at the issue off of the Florida coast specifically, this is the one that gets me the most, because you have Cuba sitting 90 miles off of Florida. They've just made a deal with the Chinese to drill for oil, let's say about 50 miles offshore, and yet we're restricting ourselves because we're afraid there may be a spill. But here's another country, and Cuba and China together, drilling close to our shore with technology that's not as good as ours, and yet we're letting them do it, earn the revenue from it, drive up the price of oil, and we're ignoring our own resource. So I think it was just common sense.
There was another issue, and I'm sure you've seen this, and there was an overlay of the state of Alaska onto the continental United States, and then in a corner showing the ANWR, and then a dot showing the property in which the ANWR, and we've been told by the environmental groups about this pristine place called ANWR, and what they showed is the actual piece of property that was going to be proposed for drilling is barren as can be for miles and miles and miles. It's dirt during the summer and it's ice during the winter. It wasn't the pristine valleys and the rivers and the waterfalls and the beautiful bears and all the caribou. It was wasteland where there's a bunch of oil underneath it. So I think that we need to be told the truth.
Well, I agree with you, Mike. And I think I was talking about the offshore, but let's talk about ANWR for a minute. Mm-hmm. My understanding, and I'm pretty close to the governor up there, Sarah Palin, and she was elected on the basis of we're going to drill. We want to drill in ANWR. The local people in Alaska, generally speaking, and in the region where the drilling would be, generally are supportive.
Well, I can
and
tell
this
you,
anti-drilling is being driven by people outside of the state of Alaska.
Governor, you know that I worked in Alaska before coming back home to Hawaii. And yes, the Exxon Valdez experience and the native groups that got upset, rightfully so, were 100% right. But it is the natives themselves that are in favor of the development because they know of the economic impact it has on not necessarily their lifestyle, but their ability to exist more comfortably in the harsh conditions. Whether it's heating their tents or giving them a vehicle that can bring them medicine during the wintertime, that's the only source of income they have. There's virtually nothing else. So I would say that the people in the state of Alaska are way more pro-drilling the ANWR than not.
Yeah, well, again, I know the governor there was elected on that basis, and she continues to press for drilling to be allowed in her state. So I believe she must be representative of the people there.
You know, there's a lot of other similarities, and we've all noticed the friendship between Stevens and Inouye. Even though that, you know, they're maybe politically diametrically opposed to a lot of things, don't we in fact have a lot of things in common, not just geographic separation, but a lot of things in common with Alaska?
Well, we do, but I think you're raising an interesting point because Senators Inouye and Akaka went against the Democrat majority in the Senate and supported Senator Stevens and the people of Alaska in this matter.
Yeah, and what I'm saying is that at some point in time, whether it be people's frustration at paying close to $5 a gallon and just saying, hey, look, it's fine about the caribou and it's fine about this, but our technology is better than the technology of some of our, you know, perceived enemies that are drilling out right offside our shelf, like you mentioned earlier. So let's get on with it. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, we got plenty more coming up, including your phone calls. 521-8383 is the number. Those of you along the governor's network on the neighbor islands, we're going to cut away for traffic and a news update. I'll give you a few minutes on yourselves. We'll be back.
Now, here's Mike Buck and Governor Linda Lingle on News Radio 830 KHVH.
Okay. Welcome back. Our second half of the program along the governor's Talk Story Network. We've got KTBH over there in Hilo. They're at the beach. 102.1 FM, tell your friends on the Big Island. On Maui, it's Kauai, 1110 AM, and on Kauai Kong, 570 AM. And here in Honolulu, of course, AM 830 KHVH News Radio. Well, you'd like to join the governor and talk story, it's easy. The number here on Oahu is 521-8383. And your neighbor islanders, you may call toll-free at 1-888-565-8383. You know, we were talking just before the break, Governor, about once again, energy and the drilling. But I also think that people need to know some of the things that the states has positioned themselves into as far as providing incentives for exploratory stuff. Now, one thing I want to ask you about is that David Murdoch on the island of Lanai has great plans to build a wind generation of electricity and running power to as many as, I think, 200,000 homes eventually. And I would imagine that's over a wire to Oahu. There must be lots of hurdles to overcome to want to do a project of that magnitude. How is the state positioning itself with regard to support a project like that?
Well, we did two things during this session, Mike. One was to hire a facilitator for the government. So if you come in and you have a project of that magnitude, there's going to be a person assigned who's going to help you get through all that permitting process on the state side. And that's a huge help to anybody who's trying to navigate a government bureaucracy. And I want to make this point, Mike, that although people can get frustrated with the government process, the process is there because somebody passed a law at some time who's, you know, on the federal side because it might hurt certain birds, for instance, and they thought that was important. So now you have to put up a test tower and you have to have a plan on how you're going to keep the birds from flying into the turbines and that sort of thing. So, I mean, part of it is just, it's just the law. So I can't make the law go away for you. It's a federal law. But we certainly can help navigate the process on the state level. And that's what this new position will do. Secondly, Mike, is to cut down the amount of time in the process for the state side. So we're going to come at it in both of those directions. Because as we were saying earlier, there are three components here. One is the technology. And the technology is there and is going to be there. So I think that issue we're going to have pretty well in hand. But secondly is the investment. And government cannot support and pay for this transformation. Sure. We need the private sector to come in. So when you get people who are willing to invest, like a David Murdoch here locally, or a Maui Land and Pine is becoming very involved as well. You see the algae project on Maui with Alexander and Baldwin and Miko teaming up. You know, we need these outside investors, and we can't let them get frustrated with the process.
I took a lot of calls, Governor, on that very issue, and I was interested to see that my audience was way more sophisticated than some people would believe, and that is that they knew that if a person like a David Murdoch or a Steve Case or anybody that had the wherewithal to make an investment wasn't making it to be a nice guy. They were making it because it was going to be a viable investment, and if they could get things expedited instead of being 10 or 12 or 20 years away, it could be 5 or 6 years away.
Well, and even giving people the benefit of the doubt, if they are doing it to be a nice guy and to help the state of Hawaii, they're still at some point going to become too frustrated with the process. And in capital today, it can move around this globe quickly. And there are many places that would love to have that kind of investment.
Yeah, they're just a mouse click away from transferring billions of dollars. Okay, let's go to the phones. We got lots of things to talk about. One of them apparently tonight or this afternoon is going to be healthcare issues. Ralph over on the Big Island in Kona. Hello.
Yeah, hello, Governor Lingle.
Hi, Ralph.
Hi. Hey, I'm calling about the state of our healthcare access over here on the Big Island, especially in Kona. As you probably are aware, we're experiencing some workforce cutbacks in our hospitals, and it seems to be coming at a time when, you know, we are in need of new and better healthcare facilities, but it doesn't seem to be that the money is there to fund our operations. And I'm wondering if you've got anything to say about that.
Well, thanks a lot, Ralph. Mike, the Big Island, especially West Hawaii, has just been hit with a real double whammy, because not only is the Kona Community Hospital suffering cutbacks, but the North Hawaii Community Hospital up in Waimea is having a huge internal battle, and the community is up in arms. They've just also laid off more than 50 people. So that whole side, it's not even a side, I mean, that whole huge region of the Big Island is really facing a difficult time right now. And what happened this year to really move this to this point is that the legislature made a decision, which I warned them about, and their decision was to break up the state hospital system mm-hmm. by giving autonomy to the different regions, the different hospitals. And while I think it was a good idea to move in that direction, what I cautioned them about is moving this quickly. I said, let's take a year to think this through because there are some serious fiscal issues involved here. So what you had, Mike, was a system where some of the hospitals are doing all right mm-hmm. and are able to support themselves, and some of them are not. And what had happened previously when it was a system and you didn't have this level of autonomy is that the system would move money around throughout the year to make sure that everyone could operate. And I specifically told them that the fiscal issue that was going to occur if they moved too rapidly was going to be severe. And now this has occurred because they're not allowed to move that money around. Now, each hospital has its own standalone board, and they're making unique decisions. In Kona, they've made decisions to lay people off. In Maui, Mike, they made very different decisions. The Maui board has established a line of credit, and they are able to operate. They're not laying anybody off. In fact, they're expanding certain services. So each of the hospitals, Hilo Hospital, for instance, it took a different tack. Everyone took a little bit different approach. And I don't know the details of the Kona decision. I didn't see their plan. But each one of the hospitals submitted their own plan. And this is the direction that Kona went. But again, they're being especially hard hit because at the same time this was occurring almost simultaneously, you had that North Hawaii Community Hospital, which is a private hospital. Mm-hmm. Remember Dr. Earl Bakken had been the big supporter of that, but he and others have withdrawn their support because of some of the internal decisions that are being made there.
So there you go, Ralph. It's sort of a dilemma, hopefully, for all of you that are on the Big Island, particularly in Kona. And in all of West Hawaii, we'll be kept apprised of what your options are.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you bet. And Governor, there's another thing too. I've had a number of community matters programs on tort reform and on some of the other things, and the number of OBGYN and orthopedic people that are real nervous about doing business in Hawaii. And this seems to be magnified on the neighbor islands. For some reason, it's even worse there. So now, and I was talking with past president of the Hawaii Medical Association, Dr. Linda Rasmussen, who is, a orthopedic surgeon. There are some people that have to come to Oahu for a simple orthopedic surgery.
Well, and it's becoming truer and truer, Mike. And you remember what happened with Kahuku Hospital a couple of years ago. They were actually absorbed into the state hospital system mm-hmm. because of the increase in their medical malpractice insurance would put them out of business, literally put them out of business. Because from 1 year to the next, the cost of that unemployment, medical malpractice insurance had gotten so big that no matter how efficient they were, they simply couldn't make those kind of payments.
You know, an anecdote, I had a gal that was in our studio who was a OBGYN who was leaving Hawaii. She was crushed to having to go, but she thought, she did the numbers, she'd have to work to be able to retire until 85 years of age.
Well, let me give you the flip side of that, Mike. In the state of Texas, when they reformed the medical malpractice laws, they now have a waiting list of 2,500 doctors trying to get certified there because it does make a difference.
Yeah, I actually had one of the fellows that penned that in part of that tort reform program. And it's all about really taking a look at things, being fair to everybody, but Texas shown it can work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're listening to the Talk Story with the Governor. If you'd like to join us, the number here on Oahu is 521-8383. On the neighbor islands, it's a toll-free call at 1-888-565-8383. We're going to talk about something much more pleasant in just a moment, and that is a big group hug that's going to go on, and maybe how you can be a part of it. But yep, and all along the Governor's Talk Story Network, welcome back. Those of you on the Big Island, we got you covered in Hilo at KTBH, the beach. Maui is Kauai, 11:10 a.m., and on Kauai Kong, 5:70 a.m. You know, I want to change things. I was saying a little while ago, Governor, when I learned about this group hug, that Hawaii ought to be like a hands-down winner in anything like that because we are huggy people.
I thought the way you said it was perfect, yeah. Mike. Just round up people from the beach.
Just
come
call
on.
Everybody at the beach and say, okay, hug everybody real quick. We're going to make a record.
Well, I think when people learn who's going to be involved, Mike, they are all going to want to come out to Aloha Stadium on August the 16th because it is a day for a deployment ceremony. Mm-hmm. You know, we have 1,700 of our Hawaii.
Kuwait this time.
Yes, our Hawaii Army National Guard will be deployed to Kuwait. But on that date, the members of our 29th Brigade and their families and friends, we will all be there. The Lieutenant Governor and I will be there at mm-hmm. the stadium. And this is for the Guinness Book of World Records. Mm-hmm. It was one of our own Keiki, 11-year-old Ashley Kakazu, came up with this idea, and she's involved in organizing this event.
I saw that, and I just loved it. What the old expression, from the mouths of babes?
That's right.
Here's a little 11-year-old kid that says, I got an idea.
And it's a great idea.
And they don't know defeat, do they?
No.
Isn't this very, very similar? And I want to learn the rest of the story, but isn't this very similar to what you talked about in the past and what we are all learning collectively with the robotics program? You tell a little kid to make a robot, and they're going to go make it, and they're not going to say, I can't.
Well, Mike, it's like a computer, right? Yeah. Have you ever seen your grandchildren or your children? They're not intimidated by it at all, and she's not intimidated at all by this record that she wants to try to break. But again, it's a bittersweet day for me because I didn't expect to have to see off our brigade again like this, as you know, but I know they're up for it. They will be going to Kuwait. They'll first go to Texas for a couple months of training before being deployed to Kuwait.
Okay, so anyway, it's going to be... Now, the only thing I don't know, because I really want to be involved, but I know that it's on a Saturday, and I don't know yet whether it's morning or afternoon. I'm still trying to find that out. And so when I find out, I'm going to let you know, gang, on how this is. But I tell you that 1,700... Well, you know their friends and family are going to be there. And I wouldn't imagine that the stadium authority is going to be charging anybody any admission to get into this event.
No, there's no admission, Mike. Yeah. And again, for our larger Ohana, it would be such a great day to come out and to say to the members of the 29th Brigade, we're with you. We're doing this symbolic hug. You know, you can take it with you, but we do care about you deeply. I think it'd be a great day for all of us to come together.
You know, I got a phone call from somebody, Governor, right after I talked about this a few hours ago. Said, hey, what are we stopping at 6 for? Why can't we do 20? I mean, why don't we put 20,000 people on the field and have them all holding hands and just do this big lunge into the middle?
Well, Mike, I'm certain that no one will be turned away.
Yeah, there you go. All right, that's the group hug. All right, 5:50 is the time. The number is 521-8383 if you'd like to join us. 1-888-565-8383 from the neighbor islands. We began, and I know a lot of you are just getting out of your cells today. Earlier in the hour, we were talking to the governor about an upcoming trip to the Bahamas, which governor's going to leave on. It's going to take her more time to travel in each direction than she'll be spending on the ground there. But a very important thing, I think, so that we know that we're not an isolated, all-by-ourself place. There's island communities literally globally that have the same concerns about energy that we do.
Well, there are, Mike, territories, states, and island nations that have these same issues of being located far away so that oil has to be brought in by ship. Also, the inability to hook up to the grid of a neighboring state is an issue. But on the plus side, Mike, all these island nations, territory states are blessed with a lot of renewable energy resources.
Sure.
And that's what we're going to be talking about and signing an agreement to work together to bring these about more quickly.
Okay, because one of the other things that I want to tell you about is that this may not be the same in some of the other island communities that you'll be visiting. But right here in Hawaii, we've got a phenomenon called an erupting volcano that's been going on since 1980-something without stop. And it's gotten to a point where we are now, I understand, through the auspices of your office and the State Department of Health, the CDC is here to take a look at this whole VOG issue.
Well, this has become a huge issue on the Big Island, Mike. And I think those of us on Oahu and the other islands, for that matter, who are not being affected daily, really don't understand the depth of the problem that's occurring there. And our concern is that we don't have any experience locally with a volcano that is putting out this much sulfur dioxide on a regular, steady basis, day in and day out. And so I was concerned after talking with our health director, Chiomi Fukino, and so I did request from the federal government to send a team of people here from the United States Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and it's their agency for toxic substances and disease registry. And they, in fact, they're sending a team here to help us to determine what is the long-term impact of this, what sort of changes do we need to do. Also, the Environmental Protection Agency has helped us with more monitoring equipment as well. We have schools that are affected in the area. You know, a lot of people there have water catchment, Mike, so their water supply is exposed. It's open to the air, so there are lots of issues there.
You know, and it seems to me that this phenomenon has been going on forever, but maybe not with the consistency that this current spate has done. I mean, or I don't know what else it is. Maybe you've looked into this, Governor, and is it the growing population? Have we moved into areas that weren't settled before and built homes that are getting blanketed by fog? What? Why so much concern all of a sudden?
Well, I think that's added to it, Mike. Mm-hmm. I think you're correct. I think there is more development in areas that were not previously inhabited. But the bottom line is we really don't have experience with this level of output of this sulfur dioxide over such a sustained period of time. We have really no good data that matches this current situation.
Hopefully the Center for Disease Control can shed some light on it for us. Okay, 5:53, still more time to talk. 521-8383, Neighbor Islands toll-free, 1-888-565-8383. Let's take a couple calls. Time permitting, we'll get to all of you. Guy in Pacific Heights, you waited the longest. Hello.
Hi.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Governor, I was wondering on this thing you're going to in Bahamas. Is Hawaii looking at nuclear energy as an alternative for fossil fuels, particularly for Hawaiian Electric?
Well, thanks, Guy. It's a good question. It's not permitted under the Hawaii State Constitution, so there'd have to be a constitutional amendment in order to allow a nuclear power plant in Hawaii. As you well know, Guy, we do have little nuclear power plants, if you will, because we have nuclear submarines that are stationed here at Pearl Harbor. But as a part of our constitution, nuclear power plants would not be permitted.
Okay.
But that's a great call, Guy, and I'm glad you called because I'm guessing, Governor, that that was implemented at a time when maybe Chernobyl or Three Mile Island or some of these other things were of concern. And from what we do understand now, the ability for the industry to be safe and to regulate itself is way changed from what it was a decade or two ago.
Well, I would agree, Mike, that it's changed, but they still haven't dealt with the issue of what you do with the waste.
With all that waste, yeah.
And look, we can't even take care of the Opala at the landfill. Yeah. You know, we need to ship it somewhere else. So I think it's an ongoing issue. Also a place that has earthquakes. I'm not certain, Mike, if that makes sense or not. I know Japan has earthquakes, and they have a lot of nuclear energy.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I think it's something we should be willing to talk about and take a look at, as you say, because that was put in the Constitution quite a while ago.
Sure.
But currently, we couldn't do it.
Yeah, I remember talking to somebody about the earthquake issue that said, you know, they're now so able to make a building earthquake-proof. The greatest building to make earthquake proof would be a nuke plant that you could put on some sort of a gyro stabilizer pad so that no matter what happened to the ground underneath it. But then, of course, nobody's dealt with an 8.0 earthquake that's right underneath them either, have they?
Yeah, no one wants to live next door and test it out either.
Dan in Honolulu is next. Thanks for calling, Dan. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Sure.
Governor, thanks for taking my call. And have a question about Department of Commerce and Consumer Affairs. Problems with processing complaints. I'm a realtor and filed a complaint against another realtor for false advertising, and it's taken like 21 months, and I don't think they've even reviewed it after 21 months. And I was wondering if there's a problem, a management problem at DCCA with complaints like this. Do you have any idea, Governor?
Well, Dan, I'd have to get your number off the air and go look into it specifically, but I can tell you, and I'm not bragging about it, but it was voted the best department by the Chamber of Commerce, the most efficient. They're very customer-driven, so unless there's something, again, that's just not apparent from a simple complaint, there's no reason anything should take 21 months. So, Dan, give the number off the air.
TK will take your number. And just out of curiosity, you may know my wife is also a realtor. And I'm wondering, have you also gone to the Board of Realtors with this condition?
Yes, I started at the Board of Realtors.
Uh-huh.
And what happens is when you file an ethics complaint at the Board of Realtors, if we also file a complaint at the Department of Commerce and Consumer Affairs, the Board of Realtors will put their action on hold until the state decides what they're going to do.
Interesting. Okay, well, just
so the board has been on hold for 21 months.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, Dan, hang on. TK, will you talk to Dan over there on line one and get his number, and somebody from the governor's, from the DCCA will call him. Interesting, you know, and here probably voted by the most critical group of all. I mean, if the Chamber of Commerce says something, that means that their members are happy with something.
Well, and we've been so fortunate. Remember, we had Mark Rechtenwald, who's now our chief judge on the Intermediate Court of Appeals. Mark headed the department for many years, and now Larry Reifert does a great job. Again, they're very customer-oriented, Mike. So I think there's, as oftentimes the case, probably more to the story. But I will follow up and get back to you.
Okay, we got a couple of minutes left to go. And before we do say goodbye, well, that's going to do it for this edition of Talk Story with the Governor. Those of you on the Neighbor Islands, in Hilo at KTBH, on Maui on KAOI, and, of course, on Kauai at Kong. Governor, nice seeing you. Look forward to seeing you again real soon.
Aloha, Mike.